We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
Impress your friends, amaze your coworkers, make your family proud. Here's what you need to know.
Fourth quarter of the program begins right now, finishing strong. Trent Green coming up in our next segment, Need to Know, coming your way right now. You also need to know that if you want the best tasting, cleanest water around, let my buddy Bob at Culligan Water take care of you the way he took care of me and my family. Go to CulliganKansasCity.com/Bob. We got the reverse osmosis. Basically, it's the tank is below, does all the cleaning of the water. You get bottled water, quality water, right out of your same tap. You don't have to cut a hole in the counter and put a whole new tap in. They just run the line in, and you press a button, a Bluetooth button, and it switches over, and you're getting bottled quality water right out of the tap, whether it's that or water softeners, water at your business, you name it. Let my buddy Bob take care of you. Go to CulliganKansasCity.com/Bob. Today, and don't forget right now, you can receive up to $300 off on the new line of water treatment solutions that are out there. So let Bob take care of you. Again, up to $300 off right now. Go to CulliganKansasCity.com/Bob. Let's start with a little bit of Chiefs news. Veteran wide receiver Josh Gordon is going to be waived by the Kansas City Chiefs, but they are expected to sign him back to the practice squad. So just coming off the active roster, but will still be around and could be part of the equation for the Kansas City Chiefs. Andy Reid meeting with the media today. I asked him what we've kind of talked about all day. If offenses have gotten so good, the quarterbacks, the receivers, the defenses are just powerless to stop them.
Yeah, I think it's a cat and mouse game. I mean, one year it might feel like that, or one game it might feel like that, and then the next game it goes the other way. So just depends a little bit on the matchups or whatever coverages, whatever routes you might have called. I mean, there's a lot that goes into that, but I would just warn that it's an up and down yo-yo, man, as you go with this thing. One year the defense is dominating the offense, and then the offense comes back and dominates defense, and you probably could break it down, like I said, to every game. It's a little bit different.
You know, I'm fine if you say, no, we're not there yet. We haven't gone that far, right? But, you know, the trend is going more and more offense. I'm not seeing, you know, like there may be okay, it's not as big this year, but the overall, you know, line of where this is going is offense, offense, offense.
Especially when you've got guys like that played last night. I mean, when those two offenses are executing at their best level, regardless of what the defense does, it's pretty damn hard to stop them. I mean, you really have to kind of hope for a mistake. You can rush them, you can do this, you can mix them up with schemes, but if they're on, just, you know, your team's going to have to outscore them.
That's right. You're going to have an offense. You're going to have to be able to outscore them, and that's what's going to have to happen in Cincinnati. The Bengals are going to have to put up points. I mean, I think it's clear that you're not beating the Chiefs without getting at least a 30. It looks like 30 is the point where you start thinking you've got a chance to win the game. Where is this game rank all time? I asked Andy Reid that, if there's a moment when he'll think about where last night's game ranks.
Yeah, I might down the road somewhere, but you got it. I mean, right now, I mean, since last night, we were moving on to Cincinnati. I mean, it's just, you know, there's no time to wait on that. And they had an extra day there to kind of take a look at whatever two teams they thought they were going to play. And so it was important that we got on it and make sure we have all the bases covered. So that's where we're deep into it right now, Saran. So Cincinnati.
Not going to, I mean, even comment on it, right? Like, just won't even allow himself to take a moment.
I bet he did. I mean, how can you not? I mean,
I don't know.
I mean, I get he's thinking about the next, but a couple of moments, someone says, man, that might have been the best game of all time. What do you think? He might have gone, you know, possible, you know, that one game. He probably thinks, because he knows football, he's just like we do, he thinks of those games. Yeah, that Dolphin Charger game would have been pretty good, but this is right up there. I'm sure he took 30 seconds and thought about it.
I think if he had lost last week and he sat back and watched this as he was beginning their offseason prep and everything, yeah, he'd have something. But the fact that he has to move on, I literally think every minute of every week is taken up.
Could be.
And he doesn't allow himself. I think there'll be a time.
Yeah.
Sam McDowell asked him something kind of similar. He asked Coach Reed if he looks at the tape of those last 13 seconds with a pure coach's eye, or are there any emotions that come from watching it?
Yeah. I have no sound on my thing here, so I'm doing my own narrations. And I would tell you that, unfortunately, my eyes trained to go to the things that aren't so good first, and but so I don't get too caught up in it emotionally. But it was a crazy situation. I haven't been through a lot of those with 13 seconds left, but I thought we managed that whole process the right way. But whether it was the timeouts, whether it was the players, where they could make some adjustments according to looks that took place, and I think it just all worked out well. The coaches being able to get the plays in. I mean, EB, I mentioned last night, has a ton of things going through his headset, and for him to be able to get everything spit out to the quarterback is a, you know, that's a challenge, and he did a nice job with that during the most chaotic time.
There's a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
And yet both teams, at least from an offensive standpoint, still played at a high level. And listen, there was some good defense played as well. They just ran into better offenses.
Yeah, and if you put the Chiefs in this exact situation 10 more times, it's a good chance that they don't ever get down there for the field goal. But they don't have to, because one time they were faced with it, they got it done.
Adam Teicher, speaking of those last 13 seconds, asked Harrison Butker what he was thinking when that drive began.
Yeah, as a kicker, I try to be ready for every moment, whether that's the first series extra point or the last series game tying kick to go to overtime. So every kick's a big kick, and I have to prepare every series like I'm going to have a big kick. And if we have the ball, I need to be ready to go. Obviously, when there's only 13 seconds, you know you're going to be up really fast. So I got as many kicks as I could in the net, got with Tommy, got some holds with those kicks in the net, and just got prepared and got my mind mentally ready to go out there and make the kick that we needed to go to overtime.
Kick was in about the same spot. Adam Teicher asked Butker if that fact that it was where he had missed earlier was in his head.
You know, I think it was actually a blessing. You know, when you have a missed kick, you're able to kind of think about what you need to change, what you need to adjust. I thought the 50-yard left hash that direction, I adjusted my aiming point too much, kind of deviated a little too much from the game plan I kind of had in the warm-up. And after that missed kick, you know, I kind of hit myself on the butt and said I just need to stick with the game plan I had in the warm-up, and that's what I did for the 49-yarder. So I almost had like a practice kick with the miss and was able to bounce back and take what I could from the miss and help me for the 49-yard left hash same direction.
I mean, think about that. If you get to that spot and then he misses.
Oh, my God.
Particularly with the night he'd already had.
Yeah, and it wasn't like he banged it down the middle. I mean, that thing was hugging that left upright pretty tightly. So, yeah, I think it's good that he had the kick before. I don't know whether he made it or missed the first kick was necessarily impactful on what he did on that one. I think it's nice that he had been through the elements, knew what the wind was or whatever, and more, all that stuff. I get that part of it, but I can't. Of all the things that would have happened to get to that point and have him miss a third kick would have been...
It would have been Lynn Elliott-esque.
Yeah.
I mean, it really would have been. It would have been the two happiest people here today are Harrison Butker and Cam Akers, who fumbled twice for the Rams, mm-hmm. and they were still able to overcome it and get the win. But, you know, Butker was clutch and got it done. I mean, there's no way around it. Patrick Mahomes was clutch. I asked Mecole Hardman what it's like in the huddle at moments like last night with Pat.
You know, the guy did this, you know, I wouldn't say the coolest because he's more so locked in and focused on the thing at hand. So it's like once he come in the huddle, he's demanding the attention. He's demanding the respect and let you know, like, it's not over until, you know, until the clock hits zero. And it's like, once he coming there with that persona, that demeanor, it makes you straighten up a little bit. And, like, you know what? If, if he in it, you know, we in it too then, and we're gonna go to the end. So that guy is special, man. I think he's one of the most talented, gifted players I ever been on the field with. And just for him to do what he does and the plays that he makes is remarkable. So I'm glad to have him on our team, and the respect he demands, and just the guy he is, just, you know, makes you respect and wants you to go out there and play for him and give him your all. So,
you know, he carries a swagger. There's no doubt.
Yeah.
Sam McDowell asked Hardman, let's get this part too, about Pat. Does he actually say something like, this isn't over yet? Is there a rah-rah to it? Or is it just the way he approaches the huddle?
I think it's a bit of both. You know, I think because he'll tell you, like, let's go. We got work to do. Let's do it. You know, and like, let's finish this game off the right way. Or, you know, just certain things he'll say, and that you know he's for real. But you know that he mean it by his demeanor as well. You know, when he comes to the huddle and the plays that he make, and, you know, whether it's running the ball or making ridiculous sidearm throws, you know, or just, you know, putting the placement of the football where it needs to be. So I think it's a little bit of both of them to answer that question.
It's nice to know that even the receivers consider those ridiculous sidearm throws.
Yes.
I mean, part of it is there's no doubt he had a swagger the moment he walked out on the field. I mean, I remember watching that even that year that he was behind Alex Smith. You could see the confidence, and I remember they went out and they had like a passing game one of the first days of training camp where their quarterbacks, they had something sitting on top of a barrel and they were throwing and seeing who could knock it off first or whatever. And I think it was Tyler Bray still here? I can't remember who the third quarterback was that was out there throwing. Anyway, you know, he was, because he botched the game against Denver.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Patrick Mahomes had to come back in.
He had to go back in and resave it, rewin it for him.
So it was Tyler Bray, and you could just see the confidence that the kid had. You know, here are guys that have been around for a while, and Alex Smith, a very accomplished NFL quarterback, and you could see the swagger that the guy had, and he carries that into the huddle. But now, with every success, there's also this body of work that comes into the huddle with him as well.
Yep.
You know, like, it's not just he believes he can do it. He's done it. You know, never again can you, like what, 1 second? And at your own one, maybe you're out of it?
Yeah.
You know?
We've heard the Joe Montana thing. And when guys like that walk into a huddle, he just looks at every player and they believe it's going to happen. And he's that level. By the way, Mecole Hardman has a good spirit. He's,
oh, yeah.
I'm really glad that he has become now an impactful, because he was an impactful player in that game, certainly. I mean, he had the touchdown, you could see some of the skills, and he had that, you know, kind of streak down the sideline and set up the winning touchdown. I'm really glad that it's starting to happen for him, because he's just a fun guy to listen. When he told the story about the ride that he likened to last night, it was just, I can't imagine that story being told by any other player on this team.
Yeah, he was just, you know, going, oh, you shoot out of a thing and then it's slow and then you shoot out of a thing and then, you know, it's like that's what it's like. That's what
last night was like.
What? One other nugget from the NFL. We heard this on the Sports Center. We're going to draw attention to it. Gail Benson, the owner of the New Orleans Saints, acknowledged that Sean Payton's status remains uncertain for the 2022 season with the Saints. "Quote: I don't think any of us know, but he'll let us know soon enough." Really? Like, you're not going to get me a quarterback? I'm going to go, like, I'm assuming that Dallas is where he's been rumored numerous times to go to the Cowboys, because he was on the staff down in Dallas under Bill Parcells. I mean, that has to be it, right? Who else would be wanting to give up draft picks for a coach?
Nobody that I think would be in the running. Dallas, I mean, the only one.
That where he would want to go. I mean, yeah. I assume he's, you know, wanting to go back and coach Dak Prescott, so we'll see. We'll see what ends up happening. But could have another coaching vacancy out there, this one coming open late, and we'll see if they get any deal done, because he's under contract, so somebody's going to have to trade picks for him. We haven't seen that. Is John Gruden the last time that happened?
Yeah, I don't think there's been one since then. There haven't been many like that at all.
Dick Vermeil,
yeah.
John Gruden. I guess Vermeil was after Gruden, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it have been?
Oh, yeah, I was thinking Gruden the last time. Yeah,
right around the same time.
No, Vermeil was a year ahead. He was 01, Gruden was 02.
Yeah, so those are the last two that I can think of.
Yeah.
All right, we'll take a break. Trent Green joins us next here in the program. We talked to the quarterback and the man who called the Bengals and Titans game on CBS. Trent Green up next.
The Program with Soren Petro.
Yes, I like bacon on whatever because bacon is pure. It is bacon. It is wonderful. Everybody likes bacon.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, guys.
He did something no quarterback will ever do again. Get drafted in the 8th round. He's a two-time Pro Bowler and has as many rushing touchdowns as Joe Delaney. Look it up. It's true. It's time to go from the gun with Trent Green.
The most talented man I've ever met.
On The Program.
Presented by Ascendus Hair Restoration. Get your hair back using state-of-the-art robotic hair transplant technology from Ascendus. Book your free consultation at KansasCityHairTransplant.com.
Welcome back here on The Program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB as we continue to break down an incredible playoff weekend. A man who was part of the calls of the games is Trent Green, CBS Sports, of course, former Chiefs Pro Bowl quarterback, joins us here in the program right now. Trent, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. What an incredible, incredible weekend of football. As you said, I was with CBS doing the Cincinnati-Tennessee game, and that was the first game of the weekend, and you know, ours came down right to the wire, right to the final play. We're like, man, I don't know how the other three live up to this. And then the San Francisco Green Bay, same thing happened right at the end of the game. And then, you know, you move on to Sunday. So just the fact that all four games went down to the final play of the game, you know, obviously the Chiefs went to overtime. It's phenomenal when you consider this entire weekend of playoff football.
Yeah, it just insane. And you had to feel like, how lucky am I sitting here doing Titans and Bengals? I get the best game of the week. And then, nope, they're all that good. And one ends up being, I mean, frankly, historic with the Chiefs game. I mean, yeah, I can't imagine how happy the television networks are because there was no tuning. The one game you might have tuned out was Rams-Bucks because that looked completely lost. Maybe you turned off with 13 seconds to go. No way even Patrick Mahomes can do this. But
right.
Rams-Bucks was the one that looked like maybe it was getting out of hand. And no, Tom Brady, you know, does some Tom Brady stuff and gets a little lucky with some of the mistakes and turnovers. You know, I said earlier that the two happiest people in America today are Harrison Butker and Cam Akers. Because Butker left 4 points on the board, and Cam Akers, you know, helped fuel the comeback for the Tampa Bay Bucks. Yet both their quarterbacks were able to lift them up and take them to victory. I mean, just unreal. What
you know? You didn't even bring up the Saturday night game. You know, you talked about the exciting game. That game, you know, first off, Lambeau, and then as the game's going, you know, it switches over to snow, and, you know, the snow's accumulating on the field, and it's a defensive slugfest, right, because the wind chills at zero, just back and forth, and San Francisco wasn't doing a thing. And I had gone, after the game, they had like a little kind of celebration for the end of the season type thing with some food and that, and I got done with dinner, and I was going back to my room, and I happened to go through the hotel lobby and I see it on the screen, and all of a sudden the punt block by Jordan Willis, of all things, who grew up here in Kansas City and went to Rockhurst, and so it was great for him. But I was like, wait a second, they haven't been doing anything this entire game, and now all of a sudden it's a 10-10 game, and you know, it's just amazing how every single game had those types of moments, those types of games, or those types of plays. And, you know, obviously culminated by Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill, and what they were able to do in those final few seconds is amazing.
I think that the Madden game has given people a great knowledge of a lot of things about football. But the one huge negative is it really oversimplifies and doesn't really shine a light on how hard it is to play quarterback. And I think people, you know, they play Madden and they press their buttons and the ball goes where they want it to go. And they think that's how it is when you're actually back there. You know, I've just had been, you know, back in the day when the media could get down on the field and be close in training camp and stuff like that, I feel like I've got a pretty good appreciation for just how fast the speed of the game is. And people don't understand how difficult that quarterback job is, how physical it is, all the stuff flying around you, and then to make the throws. You played that position, and you played it at a really high level, Trent. What goes through your mind? I know I'm flabbergasted by what I saw Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen do. You played the position. You have an even better understanding of what they were doing in that game. What went through your mind watching those two?
You know, every time I watch those guys play, and they're two of the most special quarterbacks in the league, and I've got a ton of respect for Josh Allen and what he's done in his career and how he's kind of turned. If you remember his college career and then the rookie year and this, how his game has evolved, it's been impressive. And then from snap number one, I've been impressed with Patrick Mahomes, what he's been able to do. But some of the stuff they do, you know, I made this comment on CBS a couple of weeks ago when talking about them in a different format, but it was, every single game, you're going to have a moment. You're going to have multiple moments where you just shake your head. And there's really nothing you can say to it because they go against everything that I grew up watching the game, learning the position, understanding the position, all those kinds. There's a couple of moments every game where, number one, how do you even get away thinking that, let alone trying to attempt it? And then third, executing it and getting it done. So, you know, whether it be, you know, Patrick rolling right on the numbers, throws it all the way across the field, you know, like you did a week or two ago. It's like you would that wouldn't even enter your mind. I mean, because every single coach from like Little League on up would be screaming at you, don't ever throw back across the field. The throw he had last night on the bootleg where he literally, I mean, it was that Kent Colby, not even yeah. Sidearm. It was like below a sidearm, and he threw it underneath the linebacker's arm. And the thing is, to anticipate that, because when he threw it, the linebacker hadn't put his hands up yet. So if you watch that back in slow motion, when he throws it, I don't know if he was anticipating him jumping for whatever it was, but it's like he throws the ball, the linebacker's arms go up, it goes right underneath his armpit. It's just some of the, it's one thing to think it, and like I said, one thing to think you can pull it off and actually throw it, and then it's another thing to actually execute it. And so, and then they both, you know, running the football wise, both were phenomenal last night from that aspect. And it's something that that Josh has done throughout his career. Patrick picked his moments to do it, and I thought he, you know, that was a huge part of the early part of the game, his running. And I think both of them, their early running helped set up the passing that transpired later in the game.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, fitting. Patrick Mahomes rushed for 69 yards, one more than Josh Allen. Like, whatever Josh Allen did, that stat to me is just kind of exemplifies the game, because whatever Josh Allen did, Patrick Mahomes did just a little bit more, right? Just, you know, Josh Allen played well enough to have beaten maybe any other quarterback, maybe of all time, right? Like, yet Patrick Mahomes got it done. I mean, 13 seconds. He ties the game in 13 seconds. I thought the 31 seconds that he tied the AFC Championship game in 2018 was about as much as you could do. But 13 seconds, right. He gets inside. And it wasn't a 68-yarder. It was a 49-yarder. That's like, what did you think with 13 seconds to go?
Well, I'm with you. I think a lot of people forget, especially people that aren't Chiefs fans, forget that comeback that sent the New England game to overtime, because New England ultimately ended up winning it in overtime. So everybody wants to talk about Brady and, you know, the fact and to change the overtime rules and those kinds of things. But at that time, I couldn't believe that he was able to orchestrate that and come back and tie the game. But with 13 seconds, obviously with two timeouts, it changes everything quite a bit. I think if you were, you know, I go back and forth about the kick. I know there's a lot of people nationally talking about, oh, don't kick in the end zone, take time off. But also, we've all seen those swib kicks that don't go exactly right.
Right.
And, you know, the clock doesn't start running until it's actually touched by a player. So we've seen the swib kicks that all of a sudden hit the guy in the second level, and then now they got the ball at the 40-yard line, and you're like, well, why did you do the swib kick? It just happened to take a bad bounce, and a guy returns it to the 40. Or, you know, he squibs it and it goes out of bounds on the sideline, you know, and then now next thing you know, you've got great field position. You don't have any time off the guy. You know what I mean? So, and then there's the guy where you don't kick it to the returner, because then, you know, they get a 100-yard return. It's like, why are you kicking it to the returner? So there's all kinds of, you know, discussions you can do with that. But the fact that they, you know, the first snap, they gave so much of a cushion. And so with the speed that Tyreek has and the fact that they were clumped together over there, having lead blockers, great play design, great execution. And then the fact that he's faster than everybody on the planet, you know, it makes it a whole different deal. And then I love all the stories coming out about Patrick and Travis and how they improvised on that last one, you know, to set up and get into field goal range. So, you know, it's a phenomenal player, phenomenal execution, and hard to believe in 13 seconds, you know, they were able to get all that done. So, you know, some of it's the credit of the Chiefs and the talent that they have, and others is probably some of the lapses defensively that the Bills had, and maybe their design in those final two plays of regulation.
Yeah, I mean, listen, to be able to get that kind of distance that quick is unreal. And I'm with you on the squib kick, and that's been talked about a lot. Like, things can go wrong on the squib kick. Like, you know, it one of the upfront guys grabs it, right, if you don't get it high enough. And now all of a sudden you've given them midfield, right? Like, that's, you know.
Right. Oh, yeah.
I just talked about how hard playing quarterback is, and, you know, we trivialize it because we, you know, we have some experience playing a video game or whatnot, or you guys that play it make it look so easy that we just think it is easy to go out there and do those things. But the kicking part's kind of hard, too. Right. When they show the shot of the kickers and what a 44-yard field goal is, and then you see some of these, you know, mutts go out there for the, you know, promo at halftime and try to kick it and they can't get it 3 feet in the air, you know, like those guys are incredibly good too. And it's not just a matter of, okay, I press the squib kick button and it goes exactly 97 yards without ever getting in the air and nobody touches it till it's there on the ground. You know, it doesn't work quite like that the way everyone else does. I mean, I would have squib kicked it. I'm not saying that. I think that's what you got to do to try to get that clock going, because the Bills made so many decisions, like all their fourth downs, going for it on fourth downs, were based on, we have to score touchdowns to beat Patrick Mahomes and we have to keep the ball out of his hands. I don't know why the plan wouldn't have been to take, you know, it's 13 seconds. I think we're safe, but I'm going to take as many seconds off the clock as I can. We can't let this guy beat us. I don't get that.
For me, I'm too scared of the squib. I just think there's too many. The football has an unusual shape to it, and I've seen too many times over the years the crazy bounces, or as you said, somebody up front getting hit or going out of bounds. I mean, what I would do, and the kickers are good enough now, I would kick it high and just say, you know what, kick it to the 10-yard line. Don't even flirt about getting it inside the 5, because then you can mess up and get it into the end zone. They're going to down it anyway. Let's just aim for the 10. Get it as high as you can. Have it land at the 10, so they're forced to catch it. And then you know at least, you know, what's it going to be? 5 seconds are going to come, at the minimum 5 seconds are going to come off the clock. And I don't know. I tend to like that play more than the squib, just because I've just seen too many just crazy bounces over the year. But yeah, I mean, that's a debate we can, you know, you can go back and forth on, you know, the whole time. It's just fun to be able to talk about it, right?
Yeah. We're talking to the quarterback, Trent Green, here in the program as we break down the Chiefs' big win against the Buffalo Bills. Look ahead to the Bengals. But, Trent, I think some people are kind of like, you know, it's on to Los Angeles, right? Like, I think a lot of people build this game as really the true AFC championship game, which it may ultimately prove to be, that maybe the two best teams were there. But you still got to beat the Bengals. And, you know, maybe the part that, you know, hasn't been talked about a lot today because of the euphoria of the win is that in 5 of the Chiefs' last 8 games, the defense has given up 404, 428, 475, 364, and 422 yards. I mean, they frankly haven't played that well in a lot of the games coming down the stretch. Is that a bigger part of the equation? And should people be paying more attention to that as we get ready to play the AFC Championship game?
Well, it definitely should be, because if you think about, you know, who's involved out there, who's still remaining in the offenses they have, and you got to remember week 17, you know, Cincinnati and Joe Burrow had over 400 yards and he threw 4 touchdown passes, and you know, that offense is dynamic, and they've got that kind of that young swagger right now, right? Like, hey, we've never been there. Nobody's expecting us to be here. You know what? We're just going to go out and have fun and, you know, fly around. And yeah, there's definitely some areas that they need to focus on defensively, because even if you do get past Cincinnati, you know, think about what's out there offensively. If the Rams beat, you know, if the Rams beat San Francisco, which they haven't done this year, San Francisco beat them both times. Think about all the weapons they have offensively and what Stafford can do. And then, you know, San Francisco doesn't have the most dynamic offense, but they have their moments, and they can actually run the ball pretty well, which the Chiefs have, you know, have shown that they can be susceptible to that as well. So probably the two teams offensively that would scare me the most would be the Rams and Cincinnati rolling in here, because they can do all facets of the game. Their offensive line's not very good, and sometimes Joe Burrow hangs on to the ball too long. That's why he was sacked 9 times. I thought some of the in the game the other night, I thought there could have been some outlets for him. I think that was some of the reason is, you know, 3 wide receivers are all running up the field at, you know, the shortest route was 15 yards. Well, you know, if you come in a blitz, you come 6 people in a 5-man protection, you have nowhere to go with the football. So there's a few different things that that they will probably change up schematically from a protection standpoint. But specifically talk about the Chiefs defense. Yeah, they've given up too many yards in recent weeks, but they're, you know, they're finding ways to get it done. So, but you can't rely on Patrick Mahomes in 13 seconds pulling out wins all the time. That's a little gutsy.
Yeah, he is. I mean, you're walking up a fine line, you know, basically asking your offense to be damn near perfect to get wins. We're talking to Trent Green here in the program. You had Joe Burrow's game. You mentioned the offensive line, 9 sacks allowed, and yet he keeps firing. If we didn't have so many other great games, this weekend might be remembered as the emergence of Joe Burrow as one of the best in the league. The fact that, you know, the offensive line doesn't protect him well, and yet he still stands in there and keeps gunning is amazing. And he's not going to quit against the Chiefs. How impressed were you by what you saw from Joe Burrow?
Oh, I've been extremely impressed with him all season long, and a lot of it is just because of my personal reflection coming back from an ACL, MCL injury and the amount of time it takes and what goes into it. You know, he had his surgery in December and was back within 8 months, just shy of 8 months. He was back under center, took the first snap of training camp and didn't miss a practice the entire season, the entire training camp. You know, so the fact that he came back in less than 8 months from that type of injury, and the fact that he's doing what he's doing. I mean, the mobility he's shown, the way he's able to spin in and out of sacks, he could have been sacked even more times, even though he was sacked more than any other quarterback in the league. He was sacked, he could have been sacked more times. And just so I have a lot of respect for him from that standpoint, just because of my personal journey and what it, you know, what it takes to come back from something like that. But then it's just also the confidence, you know, talking to Zach Taylor, talking to, you know, Joe Mixon, talking to, you know, even the guys on the defensive side, Mike Hilton and Trey Hendrickson, those kinds of guys, they just talk about what a difference it makes. And the Chiefs have it in Patrick Mahomes. What a difference it makes when the guy calling the plays and leading everything has the confidence and steps into the huddle and says it with confidence. And, you know, just kind of it makes. What was the comment we said? So Jonah Williams, the left tackle for the Bengals we talked to earlier this season, he says, you know, it's different when you're sitting there in those tough moments, right? And the Chiefs were in it a couple of times, just last night. But Williams was saying, you know, you're in there and then the way that a quarterback steps into the huddle and the way that a quarterback says the play, it's like a lot of it can be sold in those moments. And I've talked about this to my boys about playing the position of quarterback. I've talked to it. To young guys trying to learn the position, whether it's high school kids or whatever, you need to know what everybody's doing. You need to know what you're doing because you can sell it. Like you step in that huddle and you say, hey, we're getting this and this is what we're doing. This is who you're blocking. This is what we're protecting. This is the route you're running. I mean, the way that you carry yourself, really means a lot. And just those, kind of the vibes that he sends. And that's the it factor that Burrow has. And as I said, it's the same exact thing that Patrick Mahomes had from day one. But just talking to people within that organization, just what a difference he's made just by the way he carries himself. Obviously his talent level is phenomenal. The fact that he came back from injury the way that he has, but it's just that they all talk about that it factor that he has and how much they all believe in him.
Does defense just not matter when the Chiefs can do what they did against the number one yard and point defense in the NFL? Have we reached a point to where the quarterbacks and receivers are just so damn good that defense doesn't even matter?
You know, a lot of it comes down to protection schemes, personnel that the defense has. You know, The Bengals will be a little bit different in that they don't blitz. I think they're one of the least blitzing teams statistically in the league because they really have faith and they're down four. Now they're missing Larry Ogunjobi, who in the first round of the playoffs, you know, is out for the rest of the season on IR. I believe he tore his patellar tendon, so he's out. They have DJ Reader, who's kind of the run stuffer, but then you got Hubbard and Hendrickson coming off the edges. Logan Wilson is a big part of it, an inside linebacker, second year out of Wyoming. He's a sideline-to-sideline speed guy that got the big interception the other night. That was his fifth interception on the season. So he's a heck of a player. Jesse Bates is Bates and Bell. Their two safeties are good. Apple's been playing well. Ruzier's been playing well. So they have a good defense, and they can cause a lot of problems. Obviously, last time the Chiefs put up a lot of yards and a lot of points. But they have some weapons over there. So yes, to your question, as far as do defenses matter? Yes, they still matter if you have those matchups. I think if you watch that Rams game against Tampa Bay, especially the first part of the game, the first 3.5 quarters, I don't know what happened the last 5 minutes of that game, but the first 3.5 quarters, the Rams defense was dominating Brady and the Buccaneers. So the defense definitely still has an impact on it. But if you have multiple weapons and a quarterback that can spread the ball around and get it to those weapons, it makes it very, very difficult from a matchup standpoint.
Yeah, there's no doubt that we're watching offense played at just an incredibly high level. It's just it's fascinating to watch. What do the Chiefs do to suddenly unlock the big plays, right? For so long, the conversation, especially early in the year, was, oh, they're taking away the big plays, the cover two, the shell defense. And it was just like, well, when they play that, we can't have big plays. The big plays are back for the Chiefs. What's changed?
Well, I think catching defenses in certain opportunities when you can get them, when you can attack them. I think that's kind of the difficult thing as a defensive coordinator. And how you coordinate your coverages, how you coordinate your blitzes, what quarterbacks are good against pressure, what quarterbacks are good against blitz, what quarterbacks are good at making adjustments at the line. You know, we're at the stage of the season where, you know, everybody's good, right? You're in the final four teams and Burrow's playing at a incredibly high level, just like Patrick is. And, you know, Stafford had one of his best, if not his best game. So it's that type of thing. And I think it makes it hard on defenses when quarterbacks have so much flexibility at the line of scrimmage. You know, the freedom now that guys have and kind of the improv of it. We touched on it a couple minutes ago about Patrick and Travis making a tweak to that final play in regulation or the second to last play in regulation. So some of it's that flexibility to improv and change at the line of scrimmage, and obviously the talent is through the roof. The rule changes have helped a lot too, but it's fun to watch. I know I enjoy it. I was exhausted Saturday night after both games, and last night I was just like, once it was one of those shake your head kind of moments. It's like, I cannot believe, you know, what we're seeing here, but it's a lot of fun as a fan, that's for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. It's otherworldly, to say the least. We're talking to Trent Green here in the program. Time for our Final Four. It's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. If you have an orthopedic or sports injury, see the experts who care for the Chiefs. You can learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. Trent, I will start you with this. Is Aaron Rodgers back with the Packers next year? Yes or no?
I don't think so. I don't. I think from a cap standpoint, I thought I saw during that game that the Packers are going to be somewhere $45 million or just shy of $45 million over the cap as they enter next season. So they've got to make some adjustments and some changes. I think obviously he's a gifted player. He may win MVP again. I didn't have him as MVP this year, but he has MVP type of numbers. I think that, you know, he still can play as long as you. I just think he has a lot of other stuff going on, and I don't know if he decides to just hang it up or if he decides to go somewhere else and give it a try and maybe, you know, do what Tom Brady's done, do what Peyton Manning's done, where you go for a year or two or three and, you know, try and make it out. I don't know if that's important to him. You know, like I said, he's got a lot of other interests outside of football that he's in, and so I'm going to say no. I'm going to say he won't be back with the Packers.
Okay. Current wide receiver, any wide receiver in the NFL that you could have to throw to, who would it be?
Oh, wow. Goodness, let's see. I mean, obviously the season that Cooper Kupp put up, I don't know how he keeps putting up those numbers. I mean, it's phenomenal that he had nearly 2,000 yards receiving, and yet they still don't cover him in the playoffs. So they put him in one-on-one. I mean, so I think he's got to be in the mix. Tyreek's got to be in the mix. Devontae Adams has to be in the mix. Jamar Chase, he's got to be in the mix. It's you're not gonna get me to pick just one. So I mean, I think any given moment or time or you know, and then you got DeAndre Hopkins. I mean, I'm just sitting here trying to think. There's so many phenomenal receivers, but based on this year and based on the numbers, I guess you'd have to go with Cooper Kupp.
Okay. I think that's fair enough. I'll take that one. All right. What's your Super Bowl pick?
Well, I think it's going to be a couple of my. I think it's going to be a couple of my former teams. I think it'll be. I'm really going to be the Chiefs and the Rams. It won't be the I-70 series like it would have been a few years ago. I think even though the Rams haven't beaten San Francisco this year, they had a 17-point lead. They blew late, and I know Cincinnati beat the Chiefs a couple weeks ago. But I'm going to say the Chiefs and Rams. It'll be a heck of a matchup. But we'll see.
Yes,
we'll see.
Yeah, they still got to play the games. And who wins?
That's it. Who wins? I would think that if you think defensively, you would think the Rams, just because of their defense and what they're able to do compared to the Chiefs' defense. But as we've seen, there is no way you could go against Patrick Mahomes and what this team they find ways to win. They, you know, whether it be 3-4 and they're out of the playoffs and they're, you know, the season, what's happening, and then they went 8 in a row and then they get in the position. I mean, the comeback wins, all this stuff. Stafford's had his struggles this season, even though he looked really, really good in the divisional round. Especially against Tampa Bay, that late throw to Kupp down the middle was phenomenal. It's hard to go against the Chiefs. So even though the Rams have the better defense, I would still think the Chiefs.
Trent, you're the man. Great stuff. We really appreciate it. Thanks so much, and we'll talk again next week.
All right. I appreciate it. This is exciting stuff. So, looking forward to it. We'll talk next week.
Oh, yeah. Just keep it rolling. That's all we need. Trent Green with us every Monday here in the program.
But first, the Jazz into the hour answer. Counting this year, how many times have three road teams won in the divisional playoff round?
Once.
Counting this year, twice, 2021 and 2008, Cardinals at Panthers, Ravens at Titans, Eagles at Giants. Titans, by the way, three times have been the number one seed. All three times they've lost at home in the divisional round.
Yeah, that has not gone well for them. I remember the Kerry Collins team that won 13 games was a one seed and didn't get anywhere. The Bengals taking them down. Rough go of it. Great Cajun food from Jazz we were playing for. Get that Cajun food in Independence. Get it at 39th and State Line or out at the Legends. Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen. Find them online at jazzkitchen.com. Live music. They cater as well. It's Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen. Leave you with this nugget. Tyreek Hill had the second most receiving yards ever in a playoff game for a Kansas City Chief with 150. Do you know the only person to have more? Tyreek Hill.
Oh, my.
With 172. What I find interesting is, do you know when he did it?
I do not.
1 year ago and one day, some 366,364 days later, because he did it this time on January 23rd of 22. It was January 24th of 21 against the same Buffalo Bills.
Oh my.
In the AFC Championship game. Of course, the season a week shorter, so the AFC Championship game was played on this week. Tyreek Hill likes him some Buffalo Bills. In the postseason, 172 last year, 150 this year. Maybe the only other thing that's a little bit more ironic is Tyreek Hill is actually tied with the 150 against Buffalo this year for second with Dwayne Bowe. Do you remember Dwayne Bowe having 150 against the Colts at the end of that 13th season, January 4th, 2014, in that game?
I don't. Only thing I remember about Dwayne Bowe in that game is him being out of bounds at the final play.
That's right. That's right. 150 yards wasn't quite enough. That'll do it for us. We'll talk some more Chiefs football tomorrow at 2:00.